Battle is young author of Copywriting Grab Bag. It's a book which is the source of a myriad of ideas and suggestions and tactics that can really benefit our operations as well as a lot of other kinds of operations, too. Ben has been so successful, in fact, in his profession that he rarely accepts any new copywriting. Instead, he's been trying to improve the quality of advertising messages all over the world through his website, which is bensettle.com. You can go there to read his blogs and constantly updated living newsletter. Pretty nifty. And Ben today is with us to pass along his thoughts on how we can learn from and apply some tried and true copywriting techniques and tactics to improve our promos and imaging. And Ben is a very interactive sort of guy I've found over the last couple of weeks talking to him. So please feel free to pepper him with questions as they might come up. So, Ben, good afternoon.
Hey, Bill, thank you for having me on. I've been looking forward to this since we first talked. What I'm going to be teaching specifically is a very small but important part of a system I've created over the last several years of writing ads and selling. You can use this for advertising. You can use it for your email promos. You can use it for your on-the-air promos. You can use it if you're negotiating with a vendor or somebody else. I mean, all of this can be applied to any type of persuasive sales, which is what copywriting basically is. The same concepts I'm going to show you. Yeah, I use them in emails and in sales letters, but, I mean, you could also use them. You know, 50 years ago, people would use them in mom and dad's living room to sell vacuum cleaners. It's all the same. So what I'm going to do is start by going over 10 specific things that I have used in my ads that have just really, really made things easier. And I think the thing you're going to like the most about this is, I don't know if you're like me, but I hate ads that pretty much disrespect the people reading the ads, and after you learn and use what I'm about to show you, you'll never have to use hype or lies or exaggeration or any of the stuff that you might see your competitors using, because it's very dangerous right now in the advertising world, because there's so much, many people coming on the scene, and a lot of stuff, if you you might look at it and say, oh, that's what they're doing, that's what's working, when in reality, we don't know if it's working unless they're testing things. And a lot of things people are just throwing against the wall and seeing if it sticks. So with that said, I'm going to start the first thing, and that is simply knowing your audience. This is the key, the number one thing when you're writing ads or selling of any kind. Now, Bill is telling me that all of you are very incredibly passionate about your communities and about the people that you're selling to and writing promos for, that who are going to see your promos and that sort of thing. So that's really good. You already have a very solid foundation if you actually care about your customers, because you'd be amazed at how many people don't care about their customers, and their only goal is to extract as much money out of their wallet as they can, when in reality, real selling, whether in print, like what I'm going to be talking about, or any other kind of selling, is actually getting to know your audience like you would know your favorite TV character, or even better, like someone in your family. I mean, when I'm writing ads, I always, depending on the product, I try to pretend like I'm writing an ad to someone I know and love. You know, would I use 1,000 exclamation points to, you know, get a point across? Would I exaggerate? Would I really hype things up? No, I would actually talk to them like a normal, rational human being would. And this is probably where a lot of ads I've seen go wrong. They think it's all about screaming and, you know, trying to scream to get someone's attention. You probably hear this on the radio a lot, but I can just tell you that's really not the way to do it. So that's the first step, is knowing your audience and really getting to know them on such a level that you know what their biggest pain is. You know what their biggest fears are. What keeps them up at night? Now, that's a good question to ask. What is it that they want more than anything right now? I'm going to go on a little side note here. There's a copywriter. His name is Doug Deanna. He's probably one of the top direct mail copywriters in the world, certainly in America. And he actually, he has this quote that I thought was so important that I actually taped it to my wall. And I'm just going to read it real quick because I think it gets the point across better than anything I can say. And that is, copywriting is not building a bridge from your product to the prospect. It's building a bridge from your prospect to your product. In other words, it starts with the person that you're trying to sell to. It starts with what they want. What do they need? What is it that's hurting them in their life right now? What pain are they feeling? And then the product comes in, and you want to tie your product to whatever it is that's causing them pain. And this is what it all comes down to. All persuasion comes down to finding out what people want and then just showing them how to get it. And obviously tying it into what you have to offer, whether it be to buy something from you or to whatever it is you're selling. You just want to tie it into whatever it is that they want. And I mentioned Doug Deanna a few minutes ago. I want to say something else about something he taught me personally. I had a chance to talk to him a couple summers ago, and he asked me, he goes, "Ben, do you have a dog?" And I said, "Yeah, I got a dog." I had actually just gotten a dog. He goes, "You know, I can get your dog to come right to me even though she's never met me and doesn't know me." And I said, "Well, how would you do that?" He goes, "I'd walk in." He goes, "I'd hold up her favorite dog cookie." And he's right. She would probably go running right over to him if he did that, no matter what I say, even though she's my dog. And my point here is that, I'm not comparing humans to dogs. I'm just saying that's how we are. You don't need to manipulate someone. You don't need to con someone. You don't need to try to hype someone or exaggerate things to get someone to buy something if you've simply found out what they already want anyway, because that's what people are, you know, they're already looking for it. So if you can tie what you have to what they want, that's 90% of the battle right there, and that's kind of why I wanted to start out with that one. Everything else I'm about to say builds upon that, but that's the foundation. So the first thing is know your audience and, you know, find out what it is that they really want. And this is always going to vary from community to community. So, you know, get to talk to your audience, talk to the people who you're trying to sell to. It's the best way. So number two that I have in part of the system I've devised is when you're writing an ad, write like you talk. This is so important. So many ads sound like corporate speak, or they sound like, I call it cough medicine bottle copy, where you look at the back, label on the cough medicine, and it just bores you to tears. I mean, it's just so dry, corporate-like. You don't want to do that in your ads. People want to hear from other people. We don't trust big bureaucracies and organizations, you know, but we do trust other people who take the time to get to know us and take the time to find out what is bothering us or what we want. And the best way to communicate then is that when you're writing, just pretend you're writing an email to a friend. Pretend you're writing an email to your mother or your father or your child or, you know, anyone that you care about. Which is what would, you know, you probably wouldn't use big words or, you know, words that would confuse anyone. I mean, everything should just melt smoothly into somebody's head. I like to use a lot of colloquialisms. The more the merrier. I mean, that's how people are used to talking, and that's how they like to have information delivered to them. So write like you talk. It sounds so small, but it really builds a bond and it builds trust with people. People feel like they're actually hearing from another person and not a marketer or not an advertiser. It's so important that there's a trial lawyer. You may have heard of Jerry Spence. You know, he's a big-time trial lawyer in the media a lot during the O.J. Simpson case and all that. And he has this book called How to Argue and Win Every Time. And I would say if you want to learn how to really write good copy, I can't encourage you to read that book enough. I mean, it's just so good for it. Even though he's talking about arguing in the sense of trying to persuade people, almost everything could be applied to what we're talking about here. And anyway, my point is he was writing in that book saying how his success, he became way more successful when he stopped trying to dazzle the audience with big words and all that, and he just talked like a regular person, plain spoken, you know, guy from Wyoming. There's nothing, he's not trying to impress anybody. He's just talking, being himself. And, you know, that's just builds trust in people. And nobody buys, as I'm going to explain more in a little bit, nobody buys unless they believe you. And nobody's going to believe you if they don't trust you first. So write like you talk. The third thing I want to go over in this little system is stress benefits, not features. Now, this is a very, very common thing in the copywriting world and in the selling world. You know, I don't know if you've been exposed to this teaching or not, but I'll just kind of explain it. Features are what something is, and benefits are what something does for the person. So I'm going to give you an example. If you have a computer, I have an Apple computer, and it has a built-in firewall. So that firewall is a feature. My computer has a firewall, but it really doesn't mean anything to me unless I know what it's going to do for me. The benefit would be I don't have to worry about anyone hacking into my computer and stealing my identity and, you know, stealing all my credit card info and going on a spending spree and then me having to spend the next 3 months trying to get my identity back. That would be the one benefit of a firewall. And that's how you want to look at anything you sell. What is the benefit? And, you know, sometimes you might have to really sit and think about this because it's not always obvious, especially if you're selling an intangible type thing. You know, maybe you're just trying to convince somebody to think a certain way or maybe just to click on a link or something in an email. But you really want to think about the benefits. What are they going to do for somebody? How is that feature going to change somebody's life? And, you know, again, I mean, I'll sit there with a pad and paper and just think about it and just think about it and just think about it. And you'd be amazed if you just do that little exercise. You'll find out, you know, and you merge that with what people want, of course, the first thing we talked about. But when you merge benefits with what people, and you find out what people want, your ads almost can't fail. I mean, you're going to be getting their attention, and you're going to be saying what they want to hear, and they're going to listen to you, and especially if you're speaking in plain spoken language. And that's going to lead into our fourth part here, which is AIDA, which is an acronym, AIDA. And it stands for attention, interest, desire, and action. And this is a very, very old and very tried and true method of selling anything. I think they invented this back in the 1800s or early 1900s. I think it was a guy named Walter Dill Scott. And this is the format for any kind of selling on paper, selling in an email. Again, they were using this exact same structure of selling when they were selling vacuums door to door back in the, you know, back in the old days when it was truly hard to sell something. And I'm going to walk you through it real quick just so you kind of get an idea of what I'm talking about. AIDA, the first part of AIDA is attention, and that is simply getting someone's attention. With a sales letter, that's usually done with a headline. On a promo like on the radio, it could be saying something, asking a question that you know the market has to, they just can't resist listening more if you say it. And I'll give you an example. This is actually a radio ad that I'm just thinking off the top of my head that I heard not long ago. And it started out, "Do you have dandruff?" Now, anybody with dandruff who hears that, you've got their attention. You know, do you have this problem or that problem? Just asking a simple question like that is going to narrow it down and get the attention of everybody that you're trying to target with your marketing. So you just find the problem or the desire and just ask a question. I mean, that is the surest and most, I mean, this is the easiest way to get somebody's attention. It doesn't sound like you're hyping them. It doesn't sound like you're, you know, trying to manipulate them or anything. You're just asking a simple question. And neurologically, it's very, very hard. In fact, I'd almost say it's impossible to ask somebody a question about something that's important to them and them not stop for at least a second or two to process the fact that you just asked them that question. So in advertising, time is everything. I mean, you only have a split second, and it's almost like putting a stop sign up when you ask a question about a pain or a problem they have. And, again, this goes back to what we were saying in the first step, which is getting to know your market. You do that research right, and you'll know the question to ask, and you will get people's attention every single time. It's the most reliable formula I've ever heard. The second part of AIDA is interest. And so after you get somebody's attention, this is where you have to keep their interest going, or they're going to turn the dial or click away if you're on the internet, or if it's a direct mail ad, they'll throw it out, throw the ad out. So you got to keep their interest. And one good way to do that is to just say, just start telling them interesting facts about the problem that you want to solve for them. And when I say problem, that's interchangeable with a desire they might have, so I don't want to confuse anybody. Sometimes people just really want something. Sometimes people have a pain they want to get rid of. To me, it's all problems in the grand scheme of things. So talk about something interesting about that. Bill was telling me a few weeks ago how he was asking me for an example of there was a some kind of a community event where people can meet a sports team. I don't know, it was an old band from the 70s at a basketball game or something like that. And, you know, something like that would be very, it'd be very easy to build interest. You know, start researching the people who are going to be at that event, or if it's some other event, if it's a charity event or anything. Research the people who are going to be there. And you'll find all kinds of interesting things about people if you just do a little research. Not a few years ago, I actually wrote a sales letter for a guy who, I was writing a sales letter for his course on how to write sales letters, ironically. But I was doing research on the author of the product. And I found out that, you know, he happened to go to Princeton to study neurology. Now, this was nowhere in his product, but there it was. It was a very interesting thing to talk about as far as persuasion goes and teaching or selling a course on how to write sales letters, because somebody who understands neurology understands how people think and how the mind works. So that's kind of an example of what I'm talking about. Whatever it is you're selling, dig up as many interesting facts about the author of the product, if it's a product, or the people who are going to be at an event, or if it's your radio station, dig up some old facts, interesting facts. I mean, there's always, if you do enough research, I promise you will find interesting things about whatever it is you're trying to sell. So that's interest. The third step is desire. After you've gotten someone's interest, you got to start building desire for it. And this can take any number of forms, too, but this is basically where you want to start talking about those benefits that we made a list of earlier. I mean, the more benefits that you can throw at somebody that you're, whatever it is you're selling is going to deliver, the better the chances you're going to have of selling. Because now you're going to start building up their desire to have whatever it is that you're trying to sell. And, you know, I'd love to give more specific examples on this if you had a specific question, that's fine. But basically, this is where you literally build their desire. And then the last part of the formula is action. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this in a few more steps from now. But action is where you tell them to do something. If you're trying to sell a product, you tell them how to order. If you want them to click on a link in an email, tell them click on this link. If you want them to call a phone number, tell them to call the phone number. Tell them who's going to answer the phone if possible. Tell them what the operator is going to say. You know, tell them as much detail as you can about what they need to do next. You'd be amazed at how many ads, especially I've heard this on radio, they just don't tell you what to do. And they could have done everything else right, but if the listener doesn't really know what they're supposed to do with that information, it's kind of all for naught. So just keep that formula in mind, attention, interest, desire, action. It's a great, great little guideline for when you're writing your advertising. Number five would be tell stories. Whenever possible, you want to tell stories. Stories are so powerful. You can sell things just on the basis of a story, especially in copywriting and written advertising. Using stories will get people emotionally involved in whatever it is you're trying to sell. I mean, this is so big, because human beings, all of us, the biggest way that we process and we share information is through stories. We're just used to it. Usually everything we're taught as a child is in story form, and there's a good reason for that, because it's so easy to remember stories. And if you can kind of walk people through a story, even if you only have a few seconds to do it, it doesn't have to take long. So-and-so had this problem. They didn't know what to do about it. You know, they were in all this pain, and they're getting, you know, whatever the problem is that, whatever the pain is the problem causes. And then one day he stumbled across this way of dealing with it. And all of a sudden everything changed, and, you know, everything was better. And, you know, here's what he used. I mean, it's a simple little story like that can just do wonders for somebody. And I'll even take this a step further, how people remember things by stories. If you've ever taken a memory training class, back in college, I needed to take a memory training class, and I'm really glad I did, not because it helped me with my grades necessarily, but because now in advertising I really understand how stories work and help people. But basically, you can memorize entire complicated history books, math, whatever, if you just put everything into a story. And that's one of the ways they train people in memory training, is to just put everything in story form with painting pictures in people's minds of things, and you just can't forget it. And it's the exact same with advertising. I mean, if you can come up with a good story, you almost can't lose. I mean, a lot of these things, they sound very basic. And again, there's no hype needed. There's no exaggerations needed. You're just telling a simple story, and it's so powerful. Okay, now, this next part, I have to give credit to two copywriters for really drilling it into my head. One is a now deceased copywriter named Eugene Schwartz, who wrote about this in his book, Breakthrough Advertising. The other is a guy who many consider to be the greatest living copywriter today, and his name is Gary Bensavanga. And he writes about what I'm about to explain in his e-zine at bensavangabullets.com. This is could easily have been number one on my list here. It's very, we live in a time right now where I think it's like the average person is bombarded with something like 3,000 sales messages every day in some form, or some kind of persuasive message, either on the TV or on the radio, when they're driving by and they see billboards, even on like a matchbook cover. I mean, there's an advertisement trying to get you to spend money or to do something everywhere you go. I mean, you just can't escape it anymore. It's probably twice as bad. I heard that number several years ago. It's probably twice as bad now. And my point is, there's a lot of clutter out there. And there's a lot of big claims being made, and there's a lot of, I keep using the word hype because I just see it everywhere, a lot of hype, a lot of screaming and yelling and people trying to get each other's attention through brute force like that. But really what people are looking for is to believe in something. If you can prove your case, if you can prove why your thing, whatever it is you're selling or trying to get someone to do, is better than everyone else's, or just prove that it will work as you say, that will close the deal every time. I mean, if you can prove it, what you'll do is you'll tap into an emotion that we all have that's called belief. And belief is very, very powerful. One fully believed claim is more powerful and more persuasive than 1,000 half-believed claims, and certainly more believed than any empty type of claim. So this is why you'll see some ads, if you look around, the ones that do the best, for example, in fact, I'll give you an example. Recently, I wrote an ad for a golf swing product that shows people how to have a better golf swing. And all I cared about when writing that ad was the proof, because there's so many other golf ads out there. But the only difference was mine was proving it. Every paragraph, I had some kind of proof in there to prove his is working. You know, his son is in the PGA. His son took fourth at the U.S. Open, and you know, his swing was endorsed by orthopedic surgeons and engineers and physicists. And I mean, there was just all this proof I had to work with. And there's just if you just pack your ads with proof, your copywriting, your emails, whenever possible, and it's not always possible. Sometimes it's you just don't have any to work with. But you know, try to prove everything. I mean, if you can prove it, you will sell it. It's just that simple. Especially if you're competing with someone else who isn't using proof. It's just such a powerful thing. And speaking of proof, we'll go on to number seven here, which is reason why advertising. This basically means you're giving someone a reason why they should buy from you. You'd be amazed at just how simple this is. It's another way of proving something, but I'm going to give you a real-life example of a study that was done by some social psychologists. There's this book called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion, and it was written by a guy named Robert Cialdini. And he basically compiled a bunch of, in his book, he compiled a bunch of ways that advertisers use to get people to buy things. And a lot of cases, these things were not used in ethical ways, and that was kind of the point of his book. But if you're in copywriting or advertising or selling of any kind, you can also use these sort of as arrows in your quiver, so to speak. I mean, you can use them for good, too. They're like any tool. You know, a sword can be used to hurt someone. It can be used to protect someone. And that's kind of how these are, too. But anyway, when I say a reason why, I want to give you an example. They did an experiment where a guy went into a copy machine place, like a Kinko's, and there was a long line, and the guy experimenting went to the front of the line and says, can I cut through? Can I just do my copies real fast? And, you know, most people said no, go back to the end of the line. wait your turn. So then another experimenter came in and said, went to the front of the line and said, can I use this copy machine real fast? I have a doctor's appointment in 5 minutes. And like 60% of the people said, yeah, go ahead. Because they gave that reason why. You know, all it took was a little reason why, and people were much more likely to go along with it. And you can use this in advertising. And by that I mean, give them a reason why they should respond right now. Why should they click on this email now? Why should they call your station now? Why should they buy this product now? Why should they do anything that you're asking them to say? What's the reason why? So if you can master this reason why should they do whatever it is you're asking them to do, and why should they do it right now, and why should they believe you, going back to proof, you're way ahead of the game. There was a guy, his name escapes me right now. He figured out in copywriting and in direct marketing that the sale is 20% the copywriting, the actual writing, the creative part. 40% of the sale has to do with your offer. And another 40% has to do with the people you're selling to. And that goes back to step number one. You know, do they want what you have? If they want what you have, that's almost half the battle. But another part, a big part of that battle, even more important than the actual creativity, the copywriting, is the offer. I mean, entire businesses have been changed on the basis of one offer. One really good example that everyone in my world likes to talk about is Domino's Pizza. You know, before Domino's Pizza came along, you didn't really have these, it'll be there in 30 minutes or it's free. On the basis of that one offer, this guy went from a small college town, almost ready to be closed down pizza store, into a multi, I don't know if they're a billion-dollar company or hundreds of millions of dollar company, because they were the first ones to say, fresh hot pizza in 30 minutes or it's guaranteed. And it's just an offer, a simple offer, but it changed everything. And it made all the other pizza companies have to compete with them. And, you see this in other industries too. But the point is an offer. What can you offer people? The better the offer, the more chances you have. People will buy just because of the good offer sometimes. I was telling you about that golf product I wrote an ad for recently. It hasn't been tested yet, but I suspect that if it does well, and we always hope it'll do well, and you never know until it's been run, but a lot of it will have to do with the offer more than the writing. Because the offer is they'll send you these DVDs free. And they'll even pay the shipping, so you get to use them for 30 days without any risk. And then even if you don't like the golf, the video, and you don't think it's going to work for you, you can keep the DVDs no matter what, so you risk nothing. But see, now that's a very powerful offer, and a lot of people would be scared to use offers like that. But you got to understand, if you're selling to honest, ethical people, and most of us are, most people don't want to scam you or anything. So if you have a really good thing to sell, come up with really, really bold and powerful offers. In fact, I would even say put more thought into your offer than what you put into your writing. I mean, put more thought into your offer than any other part of your ad. And a good offer is, by the way, builds on that proof element we talked about earlier. A good offer is proof. I mean, you're backing yourself up like that. And, there's a million different ways you can do offers. But my point is just really think of a can't-refuse offer. Think of The Godfather. It's an offer that you can't refuse. And sometimes that alone will carry the sale. And number nine, we talked about this a little bit with the ADA formula, is ask for the sale. This is very important because a lot of people don't do it. And a lot of, for example, Madison Avenue advertising like you'd see during the Super Bowl or on TV or on a lot of FM radio stations. AM radio is pretty good about this, but FM radio, from what I've heard, doesn't seem to have a lot of direct response ads, but maybe that's changing because I don't listen to a lot of FM. But my point is they always make an offer. Call this number. Go to this website. Do this. Do that. At the end, after you've built up that desire and they want what you have, direct them on exactly where you want them to go. What do you want them to do? What do they need to do to take advantage of your offer? Just walk them right through it step by step. And then finally, number 10, I guess originally you had seen that blog post I did about converting, flipping, the way I worded it, new subscribers into paying customers. Now, when I say paying customers, that's very, very important, because there's a difference. There's a world of difference between a free subscriber to a newsletter and someone who's actually bought something. In other words, if you can separate the buyers from that list, you'll have a little, what we call a sub-list of people who are much more likely to buy again. So you definitely always want to keep building that buyer list, because they're the ones that are spending money. They're the ones who are, they're really the most loyal followers you're going to have. People who vote with their pocketbook, that means they trust you. They've trusted you enough to buy something from you, and there's a very, very good chance that they will buy something from you again or do something that you ask them to do. So you always want to...
In our case, if we can get someone to actually do something from our email newsletter, then these are more likely people to become serious listeners to our radio station.
Oh, by all means, because they, and I'll even take this a step further. If you just, there's a difference even in, if you send an email out that has a link in it, no matter what that link is, there's some, I can't really explain why this is the case, but if they just click on a link that you send them, you've bonded with them a little bit more, especially if you send them somewhere relevant that they, you said you were going to send them and it's helpful to them. It's a little thing. It sounds small, but it's just huge. Because you always want to be bonding. Every time you send an email to somebody, you want to bond with them a little more. You want them to trust you a little more, to like you a little more, and obviously to believe you a little more. So, but now that's just clicking a link. But what I'm saying is, if somebody joins your newsletter list, and you make a really, really lowball offer for something, it could be, I don't care if it costs $1 or if it costs $10. If you can just send them something, whether it be to donate money to something or to buy something, it really doesn't matter. Just something really cheap. Now you have a buyer list when they buy something. Some people won't buy anything. You know, they just won't. There's about 50% of this population will never buy anything by direct response marketing, no matter what you do. But you do want to get as many of that remaining 50% who are at least open to it onto a separate list of buyers. And when I say buyers, those are people who are going to be your hottest customers or your listeners. I mean, they're more likely to do things that you ask them to do, if that makes sense.
So try to find something where they might commit a hard dollar or two and then separate them out from your list.
Yes, exactly. And if you have the right shopping cart software or autoresponder, that they can do that automatically.
Let's take an example here, Ben, and maybe you can tell us what you would do with it. A rock station has a calendar, and that calendar is covered with good-looking pictures of girls and some sponsor coupons and that kind of thing, and normally that calendar might be something that we would give away. Instead, you would say, hey, let them pay the $350, and now let's separate out the people who did. What do we do now? Do we consider that the people that have spent the money to be our biggest fans and to treat them differently than we would others?
Well, yeah, in a way. Well, think of it this way. If somebody was to buy that calendar, you already know that they're interested in what, let's say there's coupons on there. You know that they're interested in coupons. So you know more about those people than you do the rest of the people on your list. That's intelligence that you've gathered. And now you could probably sell them something similar later, and they'll love it because they're already into it. They want offers and things like that. Does that make sense?
It does. And if our point isn't necessarily to sell them items, but rather to get them more engaged with our radio stations at a listening level, we know that they would be the ones who are interested in Chick-fil-A coupons and hot girls. So somewhere down the line, we might want to create a promotion with Chick-fil-A coupons and hot girls.
Well, that's exactly it, because they've already voted with their wallet what they really think about that. You know, there's a danger in doing surveys or asking people what they want. I've used this example. I wrote an article called Buyers or Liars once, and, I mean, it was a perfect example of that. You know, somebody may say they like something, but let's say somebody says they love dogs. You know, I have a dog. I love dogs. But the fact is, I don't really own any dog books other than the one I wrote myself. I don't own any other dog books. So would sending me a dog book, just because I say I like dogs, would sending me an advertisement for a dog book, would that be a good idea? I would say no. I'm more likely to ignore it. But if you, I am very much into selling, copywriting, marketing. My bookshelf is lined with them. You probably send me an ad for a related product, and I'm much more likely to buy from it. And I'm sure I'm on many people's mailing lists right now, and I get all kinds of offers because I have bought these things. Because, again, they were segmenting their list this way. So they have buyers on one side and then the free subscribers on the other.
So going back to your original statement of putting the benefits of a radio station up front in the copy, is it all right to constantly use the same benefit over and over in our messages?
If it's something that you know that they're interested in, there's nothing wrong with it at all. You know, it's probably good to vary things up a little bit. I mean, it's kind of hard to say for sure here without having seen test results and everything. But generally speaking, people who, if you know that they're interested in a certain benefit, there's nothing wrong with just going after them again and again and again until they buy something.
What are some of the most powerful words to create action? What are some of the words that you use to get people to do things now?
Okay, well, that's a very good question. What I like to do is, you know, a lot of this will sound cliche, but it works. Hurry, you know. This offer is only going to last X amount of hours, so if you want to get in on this, get on it now. Some people might even go so, I mean, and this goes to having an entertaining personality, you can get away with saying things like, hey, you snooze, you lose, you know. I mean, as long as you make it a genuine deadline, in most cases it's a deadline if you really want to get someone to act right away. As long as it's genuine and it's not something that is fake. I mean, if you've gone on the internet, I'm sure you've seen the fake countdowns, you know, this offer ends and 5 minutes or whatever. It's always a lie. I mean, it's just so transparent. People will say that stuff works, but you don't need to do that. What you do is you really do take your offers and you really do put a limit on them, and then you use words like, you know, this isn't going to last forever. In fact, this might even end in a few hours. In fact, they may make us take this down within the next 10 minutes. So, as long as it's true, you don't really want to lie about these things. But that's why it's kind of good to have rotating offers all the time. Rotating deadlines. The retail industry does this superbly. They always have a different offer every month. It's a different deadline. You know, this sale is going to end next week, and it really does usually. And then it'll be a new deadline up for something else. So my point is, you can only really get away with doing that is if you really do have deadlines and offers really are ending soon. You can go to town with that. And in fact, you know what I would recommend everyone do is really pay attention to the ads that are run in the top AM radio shows. People are paying a lot of money to be on those shows, as you know, to advertise in those shows. Pay attention to those ads and note which ones are running over and over for several days in a row. Because if they're still running, that means they're working. Because people are carefully tracking the sales in those things. So that's why sometimes you'll hear an ad once and you won't ever hear it again. But if you see something being repeated over and over and over, especially if it's gone on for months, that ad is working. And I would say even go so far as to record that ad and write it out in your own handwriting and just see what you can use in that to apply to your specific situation as far as using words to get people to act right now.
When we advertise our own radio stations on our own airwaves, we are our largest advertiser. So when we're doing promos for ourselves, we obviously have the most exposure. If we find that a call to action works, if we find that a particular piece of copy works, our tendency is to still change it out at the point where, hey, we're getting bored with it. Would you suggest, based on what you've just said, that if we find something that works, keep running it regardless?
I would say that if you're doing that, you are absolutely robbing yourselves of sales. I mean, I don't say that to be a smart aleck. I'm just being really brutally honest. It's very easy for all of us, and I am just as guilty of this as anybody, of getting bored of our own stuff. But it doesn't matter what we think. Only thing that matters is what does the market think. I would say keep running an ad until it stops breaking even. I mean, if it's breaking even and you're getting names of buyers, keep running it. But as soon as you start losing money, then you might want to change it up. And I will even take this one step farther. If you can swing it, test two ads against each other at all times. You know, carefully track the response. And the ad that does the best, keep that one going, and then try to beat that ad with a new one. That's the way you can really, I mean, you can double whatever your sales or whatever your response is, you can double or triple it very quickly if you do that.
That's great. We've got about 10 more minutes. Does anybody have anything for Ben, or is everybody good? Anyone have any questions at all for him?
Yeah, Ben, this is Bill Thorpe in Denver, and I want to kind of go back to the list of things that you were doing, the first 10 things, but instead of focusing on the current economic situation. And do you know any, you know, words or phrases that you've run across in your experience that really seem to touch base with consumers going forward, not only listeners, but also on the sales side, on the consumers that work in this kind of a down or a soft economy?
Yeah, there are some words that have worked. That's a really interesting question. And again, I judge what's working just by what I keep seeing, because these things change all the time. But if you see something running over and over, you know it's working. And one interesting term, which again, I'm bored of looking at this, but it doesn't matter what I think, so I use it anyway, is recession-proof. You know, how to recession-proof your job, or, you know, recession-proof your income, or recession-proof whatever, you know what I mean? Recession-proof your life. For some reason, that word, just that phrase, just I keep seeing it pop up over and over. And I'll even take this another step further so that, you know, you can find these things out without even guessing. Is if you go to your local bookstore, if they have a magazine rack, look at the covers of magazines that are being read by your market. Whoever's listening to you guys, you know, if you can find out what magazines they're reading, the exact titles, because these magazines that are on those racks, they pour millions and millions of dollars a year just into finding out what people's hot buttons are. And you can find out, like, if you find out that your station is being, the people who listen to you are big readers of Reader's Digest, man, go to Reader's Digest every time a new issue comes out and look at the bullet headlines on the cover, because they are targeting that to their research. They're doing all the work for you. They're investing all the money for you. It's all there. All you got to do is look at the magazine covers and whatever those headlines are. That's what people are thinking about right now.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, Ben, we're always charged with the responsibility of having to write 30 or 60-second radio commercials. On your website, I read about 8-second ad killers. Can you think of some examples, or can you give some examples in ways that, you know, addressing the attention span of the average person being bombarded with a lot of images, that in a 60-second forum we can try to keep that attention span using your 8-second ad killer methodology?
Well, that's the thing. You want to assume everybody is riddled with ADD. You really want to assume that people just are bored out of their minds, because most people are craving entertainment. If you want to keep someone's attention for 60 seconds, try to entertain them while you're selling them. And, I mean, again, I always point back to AM talk radio commercials, because they do this so wonderfully. You know, they will somehow take something and make it entertaining. I'm thinking right now, there's this weight loss ad, and I don't know why this is popping up in my head right now. But just saying something in an interesting way, I'm sure you guys have all heard this. The guy goes, you know, the stuff sticks into your insides like, you know, spackle. You know, I mean, it's so weird to hear something worded that way that it's kind of entertaining. So you always want to just assume that they're bored. Assume that they are just sitting there in traffic with their hand on the knob, looking for an excuse to turn that channel. What would you say to that person? You know, what can you say to that market that makes it impossible for them to turn the channel? I mean, there's so many different ways of doing this, but as far as specifics, I mean, it really just depends on the market and what they want and everything. But if you just go in with that assumption that you have a split second to get their attention and you have to keep their attention throughout the whole thing, you'll automatically start thinking of ways of doing that. And again, this goes back to really knowing your market, really knowing what makes them tick. What is it that they want? What are they deathly afraid of right now? And tying that into whatever it is you're promoting.
Is fear a reasonable reasonable tactic in a commercial?
Well, you know, I don't look at it as a tactic. I know what you're saying. Some people will shamelessly try to scare people, you know, and I don't really think that's a good idea. It can work if you're selling prevention. You have to do it. If you're selling something to try to get someone, and I don't know if you ever have to sell these types of things, but people who sell supplements, for example, they have no choice because you can't, you know, some people just, if they don't already want it, you have to scare them into wanting it. So I tend to shy away from even trying to sell things that you would have to use fear. You can use fear. I mean, you can use legitimate news stories and things like that. There's nothing wrong with that. But I wouldn't, if I was going to do it, I'd be very subtle about it. Let's just put it that way. I mean, it would have to be something that I know that they believe right when I'm talking about it. It would have to be, in fact, if you can, I mean, the interesting thing about radio, I think, is you have news going, don't you, basically? I mean, you're giving news updates. So you know what they're already thinking. So, I mean, you can tie it into current events, and that's completely, in my opinion, legitimate, and there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I'd be kind of careful with that. But you know what? This goes again to testing. If you can test two different ads against each other, you might find that using fear works really good. You know, it's just so hard to say right now. But generally speaking, I tend to shy away from products where I'm trying to scare somebody. But sometimes, you know, if you're selling prevention, you don't really have a choice.
Anybody else? Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. I think that everybody found it very useful, and we wish you very well with your site and with the way that you're now going about doing your business. And if anyone would like any notes from today's call, I've been trying to keep copious notes. I know that a lot of people are doing other things while they're on the call, so please just let me know and I'll send them out.
If you want to learn more about the Copywriting Grab Bag book, which contains over 122 more copywriting and marketing secrets just like you heard here, go to www.copywritinggrabbag.com. That's www.copywritinggrabbag.com. Thank you.